Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Big Sell when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity from bank deposits to medical visits has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. Now, that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, all of this information about us is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, banking, insurance, business, and industry is obtaining all this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? What are they going to do with it? Well, knowing how this information is being gathered, and what information is being stored, and what information you want to keep personal and private, actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy, if you know how. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package, and let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and private as you want to be. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Big Sell. It's talking about how do governments and businesses, pharmaceutical companies and big business, how do they sell us all this crap that we don't want, can't use, don't need, and shouldn't have? Well, there's an article here that I wanted to share with you in the Heartland Institute. It's called the Business and Tax News. It's let me get the name of it out here. Tax and something or other. Yeah, Budget and Tax News. It's $36, and you can get it by subscription. The Heartland Institute is up in Chicago, Illinois. They got a phone. Write this down. I'll give it to you another time or two during the broadcast. But it's 312-377-4000. 312-377-4000. Or they've got a website. It's heartland.org. Simple enough. www.heartland.org. They put out three or four publications here: Environment and Climate News, Healthcare News, Budget and Tax News, and there's one more. It deals with education, School and Reform News, I think it is. Put out these four newsletters to inform primarily legislators. This is a newsletter that they're trying to get out to businessmen, and others, they're not aiming so much at taxpayers. Taxpayers are kind of dumb. They're the people that are paying the bills. And what they're trying to do is to get to the people that are a little smarter up the scale here so that they can change policy. So in the last program, I pointed out that South Dakota is changing its business and tax policy, and they're attracting people at the rate of 27 people per 1,000 population of South Dakota are moving into the state every year. Instead of moving out and fleeing and taking their capital and their investment money with them and going to some other state, they're moving to South Dakota. Now, time was when South Dakota didn't have that much interest, didn't have that many people wanting to move in. See, if I was looking for a place to move, if I was unhappy with where I'm at right now, South Dakota would be right at the top of my list. And I'd go up there and look around and see, well, is this where I want to move? People vote with their feet. People in Mexico coming across the river, they're voting with their feet. I mean, let's just wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, there's another way that governments are screwing around with you taxpayers out there, and they're making themselves unattractive. And Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is one of them. Now, Pittsburgh used to be the steel capital of the world. And in 1960, they had 27 steel mills working there. One of them, U.S. Steel, had 14,000 workers. And I think that was 14,000 workers per day, as I recall. You know, they run that thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the thing was 6 miles long along the riverfront there. It was really impressive. When I saw that, it was a wreck when I saw it, but when I saw it, it defied description. Well, Pittsburgh had over 1 million people in 1960. Today, they're down to around 400,000. So 600,000 people have left Pittsburgh. They've moved someplace else. Unemployment will do that. The destruction of your business base and your tax base will cause people to leave. Let's just grow up and be adults here. Now, if you want to attract people, then you need to do something different. Now, Pittsburgh is not doing anything here to attract people. They're doing what they need to do to drive people away. So I want to give you an illustration of how to drive people out of Pittsburgh, how to drive them away. If you want to get rid of people, by God, this is the way to do it. Now, they start off the article like this. In the spirit of municipal cooperation and to prove the city is an efficient service provider, the city of Pittsburgh last year began collecting residential garbage in the borough of Wilkinsburg, which is a municipality adjoining the eastern part of the city. Pittsburgh is charging Wilkinsburg households an average of $120 a year to haul their garbage away, while charging their own households in Pittsburgh $200 a year, about double. Now, originally, this was a one-year deal. The contract was extended to run through the end of 2010. The borough of 6,000 households will pay Pittsburgh about $722,000 annually. Pittsburgh officials estimate the contract will save homeowners about $500,000 over what the private collection company that used to haul trash for Wilkinsburg planned to charge. All right, so here's this Wilkinsburg up here, and they want their garbage hauled away, and the city of Pittsburgh says, we'll do it for less money than this other outfit, this private company. Well, hell, you know, business is business. I don't really care who hauls my garbage. And if somebody offered me garbage service for $80 a year less than this other outfit over here, I'd probably go with the cheaper service. You know, assuming they're picking it up once a week or twice a week or whatever they're doing. Now, the people of Pittsburgh are starting to ask questions like, well, how come we're paying $200 to haul our garbage? And here's our city garbage trucks hauling our garbage for $200, hauling it for $80 less for these people over here in the suburbs. How come the disparity here? how come we're not charging them $200, or how come we're not getting charged $120? You know, I'm just that's intelligent, that's reasonable, and it's just another way, Joe, that you're getting screwed. This is just the way government screws Joe Sixpack out here. And so, as a businessman, I thought, well, now this is an interesting article. Why would the city want to subsidize this little borough up here? What's the benefit in it? How does that benefit anybody? Having the people of Pittsburgh subsidize the people that live in Wilkinsburg for hauling their garbage. All right. Well, here's the government for you. Pittsburgh residents want to know why the city's charging people in another municipality less than it charges them. Well, the Allegheny Institute's report on the true cost of garbage collection in Pittsburgh, released in July, aimed to find out just that. And they inquired into the factors Pittsburgh used in constructing its bid for trash collection in the suburb. So when they delved into the 2008 budget, financial forecasts, and industry data, we were able to estimate the cost of garbage collection in Pittsburgh, and it's about $23 million a year when considering refuse's share of the operating budget, fringe benefits, workers' compensation, fuel, and a capital fleet cost. So with 115,000 households in the city of Pittsburgh, the annual household cost in Pittsburgh is $202, about 68% higher than what the city is charging Wilkinsburg. Now that's a big subsidy, and the implications are very clear. City taxpayers are subsidizing the venture. If Pittsburgh's household cost, if they were applied in Wilkinsburg, the bill would be closer to $1.2 million instead of $750,000. That means that city taxpayers are making up the $400,000 difference. At the true cost, the city's bid would have been more than that of the private operator, who offered to do it for less than $202, but more than $120. And that's because the private contractor has to pay taxes and try to make a profit. Now, in 1996, Competitive Pittsburgh, a task force charged with studying ways to improve the city's finances and promote excellence in city government, found the city's garbage collection is an inefficient operation, and it's lower on performance indicators than both private and other municipal operators. And since then, quarterly oversight reports issued by the state confirm that conclusion. So here, listen to this. They went in there and they took a look at Pittsburgh's operating costs. You know, what does it cost to send a truck out with a driver and a worker to pick up your garbage? And the answer is it costs $23 million a year. Well, what if it costs $24 million or $25 million? No problem. We'll just raise your property taxes. Now, that's a very common modality here. Here in the United States, for you people around the world, let me show you something. We have cheap food in the United States. In this country, we pay about 20% of our after-tax income on food. Now, most of you people in Europe, it's over 30%. And around the world, in some cases, it's as high as 80%. You want to know why food is so cheap in the United States? It's because it's subsidized. Food is more expensive in the United States than it is in Europe. The only difference is that the average Joe Sixpack American doesn't understand how he pays for that. So let me explain it to you. See, we have every year a Department of Agriculture farm bill. The Congress goes out and they just appropriate, I don't know, $10, $20, $30 billion a year. And they pay that over to farmers. Those are called farm subsidies. So here's the workman. The worker here, he's working at his job, let's say at General Motors, and he's building cars. And every week he gets his paycheck, and out of his paycheck is withholding taxes. And some of his withholding taxes every week goes to the Department of Agriculture, who in turn writes a check to some farmer out here. So the farmer is collecting Joe's tax dollars that Joe is paying in every week, see? All right, now, that translates into lower commodity prices, which means that we here in America have lower food prices in the supermarket. And a lot of times people will come from outside the borders of the United States and they'll say, my God, you people have cheap food here. Well, you know, it's cheap compared to the wage scale here. I mean, you know, if you're from some country making $2 a day, food is very expensive here. But here in America, food is cheap. It only takes 20% of our after-tax income. What they're not adding in here is that you've already paid another 5 or 10%, Joe. You paid it in your taxes every week. The government takes your money from you and transfers it to the farmers and ADM and these other outfits. That's all Pittsburgh has done. They're just taking your property tax money and converting that into a tax subsidy in the neighborhood, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, you see, and letting you people pay for it. Is that good economics? No, it's stupid. Absolutely stupid. And that's why 600,000 people left Pittsburgh, because of that kind of stupidity. That's why Pittsburgh's economy is languishing. It's because of that kind of economic stupidity. It makes all the sense in the world for the mayor, the city council, and all the government workers that work in Pittsburgh and all the garbage collectors. Makes all the sense in the world for those people. They're making money off of it. And they're making money. You know, here's a few hundred or a few thousand people in city government that's making this money off of the 400,000 people that live in the city. And they're just, what they're doing is they're just gouging everybody in the city a few dollars a year. So those few people don't notice that. But here's what happens over time. You know, it isn't just the garbage. It's the overall property tax bill. And I was down in a town in Florida one day. I think it's West Palm Beach, Florida. And then I was teaching a school down there, and there's an airline pilot there. And the airline pilot invited me over to his house, and we're having drinks, sitting around the pool and shooting the bowling. And I said, I don't want to be too personal here, but a pretty nice house, nice neighborhood. What are the property tax like here? And he said, well, it's $12,000 a year. Here's a guy paying $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month in property tax. Let me show you a little difference here. I got a farm here, and I got, you know, several pieces of property here. But on one piece of property, 160 acres, the taxes are $600 a year. On 160 acres, $600 a year. This guy's got a crummy lot with a house on it. Well, I got a farm with a house on it. My taxes are $600 a year, and his are $12,000 a year, twice as much money. Can you follow that through? Now, that's why I don't live in West Palm Beach. And I guess that's why they charged $1,000 a month. That's to keep poor white trash like me the hell out of Palm Beach. And I don't blame them. I would tear the neighborhood down. I mean, if you had me as a neighbor, you know, parking my pickup truck out there with my leaky oil pan dripping oil on your pavement out there, you'd say, we want to get that trash out of here. But, you know, leaving that aside, the reason that you don't have this poor white trash living down there, running his school down there, and paying taxes down there is because you got a tax policy down there that's negative. It's anti, you know. And so here's this airline pilot. He's making $100,000 a year or more. And so as a result of that, he can afford to live there in West Palm Beach, and the rest of us poor white trash can't, which I guess is good for them and good for me. Moral to the story is, if you want more people in West Palm Beach, you know, then you're going to have to lower your property taxes a smidgen. Now, I guess that's why they have their property tax the highest, to keep us out. Well, you just keep doing that, and you're going to succeed beyond your wildest expectations. But then, you know, when you want me to come down there and spend my money on your carnival cruise, you can kiss my money goodbye. Now put that in your pipe and smoke it. Now, this is a very common process here in the United States, and I suspect it's probably rampant around the world. What you do is you tax people over here, and they don't know where in hell that tax money is going or what it's been used for. I gotta tell you a little story here. Boise, Idaho, they had the city used to pick up the garbage. And then they charged $4.50 a month. It wasn't very much money. This is back in the 70s now, so it's probably 10 times that now. But let's just put that in my computer. It's 450 times 12. How much is that? $54 a year. And if you wanted the service, fine. If you don't want the service, that's fine. You know, it's up to you. Now, they got a landfill outside town. If you don't want the service, you load your garbage up in your pickup and you haul it out to the landfill, and they charge you $2 to dump it. In those days, it was $2 or $4 to dump a pickup load. So, yeah, you know, if you got a pickup load of trash, you know, the garbage company does not haul your leaves and limbs and all your yard, you know, stuff. You got to pay a trash hauler to do that or haul it yourself. But that just gave you a little idea. Well, anyway, one day they had the mafia come in, BFI, mafia. The garbage company, private garbage company here, you see their BFI blue containers all over America. I assume the mafia must run it. And they took it over, same price, $4.50 a month, but with this provision. You have to sign up for their service. And if you don't, they'll haul your garbage off anyway and put a lien on your property. Yeah, they're going to put a lien on your house. So I took a look at that, and I said, now, hang on a second here. You know, I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer, but there are some things in life that are just absolutely illegal, unlawful, and unconstitutional. You know, like making people ride the back of the bus. And, you know, there's just some things out there, not everything, no, just some things out there that aren't going to fly, and that's one of them. So I called BFI and I said, terminate my service. And this nice lady on the other end said, you can't do that. It's the law. You have to, you know, whether you like it or not. So, okay. So some time went by, and here's what I did. I put my garbage can out at the curb every day. And every Tuesday, the garbage guy would come by, and he would take my garbage, and he would load it in the truck, and he'd haul it away. And this went on, and I was getting bills from him, and one day, they sent me a letter, and they said, hey, you're about 3 or 4 months behind, and if you don't pay your bill over here, well, we're going to put a lien on your property, and we're going to do all these bad, wicked, terrible, awful things to you. So I wrote him a letter, and I said, how long have you been picking up my garbage? And they wrote me a letter back, and they said, for 4 months. And I said, okay. And I sent them a bill for $120 for stealing my property. And I got a call from BFI. A guy called me on the telephone. He said, what in the hell are you talking about? And I said, I don't have any garbage. I only have property. And somebody's been stealing my aluminum cans and bottles and newspapers and all of that. They've been stealing it off my property. And I was wondering who in the hell it was that was stealing it. Now I've got your letter with your admission that you're the one that's doing it. And the guy said, well, it's the law. You have to have this garbage service. And I said, I don't have any garbage. Garbage is a noxious waste that needs to be disposed of properly. But I don't have any garbage. I only have property, and property is protected by thou shalt not steal, and you've been stealing my property. And he said, but you're putting your garbage can out on the curb. I said, I own that real estate out to the center line of the street. That garbage can on my sidewalk is on my property, and I'm paying the property tax on it. And I'm storing my aluminum cans and my recyclable bottles and my recyclable newspapers in my 30-gallon can, and you're stealing it. Now, you owe me $120. Pay up. And then he thought I was fooling him, so he thought I was jesting. You know, I said, well, if you want to litigate, You know, we can do that. Now, that thing ran its course for a little while, and he wrote me a couple of more letters, and I said, let's litigate. I'll put a lien on my property. Let's take this to Washington, D.C. Let's take this to the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's see whether or not you can do this. I don't think you can steal my property without just compensation. Key word here is garbage versus property. It's the way life is. I didn't write the law. I didn't make it that way. And so I kept storing my recyclable cans, bottles, newspapers in my 30-gallon metal container on the sidewalk every Tuesday morning. And I'll be darned if those guys didn't come by and steal it. I mean, talk about thieves now. They continued to steal my property. I never did prosecute them for the theft, but then they never did bill me for stealing my garbage. Excuse me, my property. Now, the reason I point that out to you is because, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. Now, sometimes city government, you know, tries to get under your skin. I wasn't complaining about the price. I'm complaining about I don't want to buy your service, and I don't want it crammed down my throat. Now, if you get down here to where, do you want to buy this service because we're cheap and we're efficient and we're better than everybody else? That's why people buy at Walmart. They're cheaper, they're more efficient, they're friendlier, they got a better business model. And that's why they're more competitive and they're better competitors than Kmart and Target and Best Buy and all the rest of them is because Walmart's got a better business model. You know, I don't care much for Walmart, and I don't care much for the impact that they have on our society. But, you know, I got to tell you, they got a better business model, like it or lump it. And that's why they're more successful. And if Carnival Cruise and United Airlines and the airports and if your governments over here want to be more successful, then they've got to develop a better business model. And that's what this newsletter points out. And it's called Budget and Tax News. I want to recommend it to you, not because they pay me a kickback and not because they're paying for advertising. There's no paid advertising on this program. This is a private program in the public interest. But it's the Budget and Tax News. It's put out by the Heartland Institute. It's a Heartland publication. They're located at 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903 in Chicago, Illinois. Or as we say in California, Illinois, because it's got an S on the end. And their zip code is 60603. If you want their federal occupation number, you know, is Yarbrough points out, Randy Yarbrough, 60603. Now, their phone number is 312-377-4000. That's 312-377-4000. And they've got a web page, and it's www.heartland.org. Simple enough. Now, they put out a publication here to educate you. They're actually trying to educate legislators, city councilmen, the mayor of Pittsburgh. They'd like the mayor of Pittsburgh and the city council to get this. Because, you see, the 400,000 or the 115,000 households in Pittsburgh don't understand how this subsidy program is screwing them out of $80 a year. They don't get that. Now, if we divide this out, see, they're picking up 6,000 people in this little town, and they're transferring that into the 115,000 households, and they're subsidizing them by about $400,000 a year. Well, there's 400,000 people in Pittsburgh. So here's what's happening. The city of Pittsburgh is taxing the 400,000 residents of Pittsburgh $1 a year to haul the garbage for this little outfit over here, this little town. And the people in Pittsburgh don't miss that $1 a year per person. But, you know, if you just keep adding that up and you get 10 or 15 of those taxes going on. So you got the building department, they're out there gaffing you. And then you got the garbage department, they're gaffing you, the police department's gaffing you, the fire department's gaffing you, the insurance industry's gaffing. You got all these gaffes in you, see? And every one of them draws a little bit of blood. just a little bit of blood. Not enough to kill you, but it's a little bit. Pretty soon, you get so damn much blood. Up in Alaska, they've got mosquitoes up there that are so prolific. I mean, by the billions and trillions. You have to wear, when you're walking out there on the tundra, you got to be dressed in a beekeeper's uniform. You got to have coveralls on, gloves, a bee veil. Oh, the mosquitoes kill you. In fact, the average caribou up there loses 1 pint of blood per day to the mosquitoes. They have to generate enough blood to feed the mosquitoes a pint a day. So if there's weak caribou, the mosquitoes just eat them alive. They just bleed them and they die. Isn't that special? Okay. That's what's happening here in Pittsburgh. That's what's happening here in America with our tax structure. Nobody is out here taxing everything you got. They're just nickel and diming you to death. But fortunately, there are some states out here that are waking up to reality. Now, the southern states did this. See, their economies back in the 40s and 50s were really languishing, the old Confederacy. So they woke up and they said, hey, we got to have a better business model down here, and they did. And business just flocked to the south. It still is. As a region, the southern United States, the South, the old South, the old Confederacy, it has the best business climate. That's why I'm here, where I'm at. I'm in Missouri is what they call the border state, see? But I'm just 6 miles from Arkansas, you know, as the crow flies, down across the lake here. And so I moved to a region of the country that is business friendly. Business friendly. I said we don't have any building codes here in our county. We don't have the kind of taxes. Our taxes are very low here, so it's very business friendly. So people that have money, people that are looking for a business friendly place, let me recommend Ozark County, Missouri. You know, if you want to build a house without a building permit, this is the county to do it in. No building department. Nobody's going to come out here and raise hell with you. Nobody's going to charge you $30,000. In California, if you wanted to build a house, it'll cost you $30,000 to get it permitted. That's before you ever come in here and do any groundwork or anything else. It costs $30,000. Start construction. That's to get the permits to start construction. Where I'm at, I save the $30,000. I don't even have to buy the damn building permit, for crying out loud. How do you like that? Now, that's what we call being business-friendly. Houston, Texas, they don't even have zoning and planning. It's the only city, a major metropolitan city in the country, no zoning and planning. Okay? Houston, it's a business-friendly place. That's why Houston, Texas is so big and so business-friendly, and why people want to move to Houston, Texas and live there and work there and do business there. And that's why they're getting the hell out of New York City and Los Angeles and Sacramento, because they're not business friendly. All right, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend George Gordon and the Law Hour or the Law School. We should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we're citing here on the Law Hour, on Editorial Review, may be hostile. They can be political. Sometimes they're religious. They can be economic. Sometimes they're sectarian. They may be racial. They may be ethnic. But they're all partisans. And their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, remember, they're mine, and they're mine alone. And they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions now of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't get mad at any of these people. You get mad at me. Send me your invective email. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the big sell. Government is out here selling you new taxes. And when they come out here and sell you this new tax, like President Obama did the other day, they aim the tax at some group of people that are going to be relatively inconsequential to the voting public, or it's going to be a group of people that they're going to raise this tax on or tax that aren't likely to remember from today to the next election who it was that did this to them. Voters have a very, very short memory. They can't count, can't think, can't read, and for that reason they're being taken advantage of. And that's because voters are politically incompetent. Did you hear that? You see, if you're registered to vote, it's the prima facie evidence that you're politically incompetent and that you need a representative to represent you somewhere and your political ideology or views. Now, I'm not a voter, and I don't vote, and that's because I'm politically competent, and I don't need Kit Bond or anybody else to represent me in Washington, or in Jefferson City, or in Gainesville, Missouri. I don't need any political representation whatsoever. None. Zero. Zilch. Get the hell out of my life. Now, as a result of that, my view of taxation, my view of politics, is somewhat different than the average Joe Sixpack. Now, the average Joe Sixpack out here believes most of the horse pucky that's being promoted by government officials. They also believe the horse pucky that's being promoted by the big corporations. You know, outfits, you know, that are selling you these automobiles and the drugs and the cancer cures. Remember, cancer, fluoride, cholesterol, global warming, 9/11. All of that's horse pucky, lies, misrepresentations, thefts. But we buy it, you know, as a nation, as a people. Not everybody in the country, you know, buys into this cancer crap or buys into fluoride. There's a lot of people out there that avoid fluoride like AIDS, herpes, and VD. There's a lot of people out there that treat their own cancers. There's a lot of people out there understand cholesterol is a beneficial nutrient. A lot of people out there aren't buying into global warming. But the majority do. And that's what counts. You know, it's 50% plus one. That's all that counts, is that plus one. Now, the tax news here, this is the budget and tax news from Heartland Institute. Now, they've got an article in here on Kansas cigarette tax proposal pays no attention to the realities of economy. Now, I'm not for or against cigarettes, so I'm not here to tout one side or the other. What I'm here to do as an educator is to take a look at a process that goes on that may have deceived you. Let's just take a look here. Politicians continue to take aim at big tobacco in the search for additional tax revenues as Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius, S-E-B-E-L-I-U-S, recently announced plans to put a 50 cents per pack cigarette tax increase right back on the table. Not to be outdone, the Kansas Health Policy Authority subsequently proposed hiking the tax by 75 cents a pack to pay for new spending on government health care programs. Unfortunately for the governor and the authority, hiking taxes on smokers is one of the least effective ways to raise long-term revenue. Okay? So here now is an analysis that we're going to do on this tax. Is this really a good economic idea? It isn't a question of can we raise the tax. Of course we can. Now get this. President Obama is going to raise the tax by $1 a pack. And now here comes the governor of Kansas, and she says, hell, let's put 50 cents on it. And then another group in the government says, 50 cents, hell, let's put 75 cents on it. Let me put my 2 cents in. Come on, governor. Let's if we're going to raise taxes, let's do something intelligent. Let's raise the tax to $10 a pack. That's just the Kansas tax. 10 bucks a pack. $100 a carton. That's the Kansas cigarette tax. And let's see how much money we raise. Now, I pointed this out the other day because New Jersey did the same thing. But in the New Jersey case, my point was, they brought in actually less money, raised the tax, and then took in less money. But now, why is it bad tax policy? Is there a way that we could raise the money that Kansas deems that they would like to raise in some other way, which would be more business-friendly, more consumer-friendly, which would not be a regressive tax, but rather progressive? Is there something else that we could be doing? It's kind of like the Walmart model. Walmart, you know, when you walk into the Walmart store, they ain't selling anything in there that Kmart ain't selling. So why is it that Walmart is selling so much more of it? There's something different about Walmart and Kmart. And I can tell you from personal experience. I wouldn't go into a Kmart store if you paid me $10 today and said, hey, go in and do your shopping in Kmart. I'd say, keep your 10 bucks. I don't need it that bad. And I can do better over here at Walmart. I don't even know if the Kmart prices are better than Walmart's. They could be. I don't give a damn if they gave me the stuff, I wouldn't go in there. Now, why is that? See? Now, it isn't that red, as opposed to blue, you know, is turning me off. There's something about the environment, the business environment there is something that drives me away. That's why I don't fly in airplanes. Listen, I used to spend $30,000 a year in the airline industry. In 1983, Barristers Inn spent $30,000 on airplane tickets. I'm happy to report to you last year, 2008, I did not spend 1 cent, not one copper penny, on a damn airline anywhere for any cause or reason. Why is that? I'm still traveling, but by God, I ain't traveling in airplanes. What happened? And why is the airline industry in trouble? And why are all the state governments in financial straits? Why is the world economy imploding? Well, it's because they don't understand the economy of taxation. See, you can raise the tax to such a level that nobody's going to buy your product. That's what the airline industry has done to George Gordon. They have simply created a business environment and a pricing structure that just drove me right out of the marketplace. And I'm sure somebody there in the airline industry, well, take your business and shove it, Gordon. Well, okay, I will. I did. Now you go pay your bills, Mr. Airline Man, without my money. No, works two ways there, partner. And so here's the governor, nice-looking lady. I'm looking at her picture here, you know, good-looking woman. But that woman is just as dumb as a box of rocks. Hadn't got a lick of sense. Can't count. She's a communist. She's practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Maybe she's even a do-gooder and wants to get all you good people out there to quit smoking. Hell, I used to smoke. And I can assure you that I didn't quit smoking because it didn't taste good, didn't smell good, didn't do what I wanted it to do. I enjoyed every puff. I quit smoking for other reasons. It ain't good for me. But, you know, if I wanted to smoke and so on, I wouldn't be paying that 50 or 75 cents a pack. I'd be buying my cigarettes from the mafia. I'd be buying it from the Indian reservation. I'd be growing my own weed. Well, going on here, avoiding high tax areas. Now, raising cigarette taxes always looks attractive to lawmakers on paper, as revenue forecasters often show a windfall of projected receipts. But out in the real world, however, people respond to incentives. And cigarette taxes have been shown to encourage smokers to avoid high tax jurisdictions. Hiking taxes on smokers is one of the least effective ways to raise long-term revenue. As state after state has learned by experience, the promise of substantial cigarette tax revenue often goes up in smoke. In Maryland, for example, lawmakers last year doubled the state cigarette tax to $2 a pack to pay for additional health care and balance the budget. They expected a revenue boom to help fix their state's unstable finances. They were sorely disappointed. Cigarette sales are down 25% in the state, and nearly 30 million fewer cigarettes have been sold in Maryland since the tax increase took effect this year. The cigarette tax, supposedly the panacea for the state's budget woes, has come up short, and lawmakers in Annapolis are back at the drawing board. Now, let me tell you where the business went. It went to the mafia. So if you want to support the mafia, raise taxes. If you want to drive all of the cigarette smokers in Kansas into the arms of the mafia, I can do it. And I know exactly how. Raise the tax to $10 a pack, and by God, you won't sell a cigarette in the state. How's that for a plan? I mean, if that's what your goal is, let's get after it. Now, on the other hand, if you want to generate revenue, you know, there's ways to do that. What we need to do is stimulate real productivity. You got to get more people to produce more. Wealth comes out of the ground, and the harder we work at getting that wealth that's down there in the ground out, the more sweat we put into the project over here, then the more we all have to enjoy. And after all, that's what life's all about, isn't it? I mean, you'd like to have a new car. You'd like to have a new house. You'd like to have a trip here and there. You know, you'd like to eat better instead of eating that margarine. You'd like to eat real butter and so on. You'd like to have steak once in a while instead of hamburger. Okay, there's a way to do that. But if we want to have steak, we got to produce more beef. You have to encourage people like me to get out there and work, feed more cows, and produce more. But the reason that we have higher prices for food is because we are discouraging the food producers. Food producers. We're discouraging them. We're taxing them. We're raising hell with them with regulations. And so they're producing less and less. And so that makes the price go higher and higher. And so then we eat more hamburger instead of steak. That's all. Just that simple. Now I want all you people out there to know that I'm not missing a meal. I'm not doing without steak. And I'm not eating hamburger unless I want to. So I would suggest, you know, if you want to increase your standard of living, if you know you're looking for a better way to do things, that we follow the Walmart business model. And I want to encourage you to subscribe to the business and tax news put out by the Heartland Institute and educate yourself. See, they're not after you, Joe, Sally, but I would like to educate Joe and Sally to what in the hell's going on. There's alternatives. If you're a smoker in Kansas, I don't care if you smoke anywhere in America. Do you know you can cut your cigarette bill in half by buying your cigarettes from the mafia instead of buying them from 7-Eleven and Kmart? Just wanted to point that out. So, and that's exactly where they're driving you. I just want to help the state and accomplish its goals. They're trying to drive you out of the marketplace. So let me help them. Let me help steer you out of the marketplace and into where you can buy more for less. After all, that's what Walmart's in business for, isn't it? Now, here's Missouri's low tax. Let me show you this one. Only a few states have lower cigarette taxes than Virginia. Unfortunately for the governor of Kansas and other cigarette tax hikers in Kansas, neighboring Missouri is one of them. The Show Me State levies a tax of only 17 cents a pack on cigarettes. It's the second lowest cigarette tax in America. With such competitors sitting just across Kansas border, every policymaker in Topeka should understand policy changes are not created in a vacuum. Every time a state changes its tax policy, it directly and immediately influences the choices of businesses and individuals, and in this case, smokers. Now, if the Kansas Health Policy Authority is successful, and if Kansas lawmakers adopt the proposed 75-cent-a-pack cigarette tax increase, that tax would increase to $1.54 a pack. The tax cost per pack of cigarettes would be $1.37 lower in Missouri. The Kansas tax would be higher than in any bordering state. Even State House Minority Leader Dennis McKinney has publicly acknowledged the difficulty of Kansas competing with Missouri if the tax increase passes. Now get this. If you're a cigarette smoker, and if you're smoking a pack a day, that's 365 packs a year. Let's just do this. 365 times $1.54. It's going to cost you $560 more to smoke in Kansas than it costs you to smoke in Missouri, assuming you're just buying the same brands that we're buying over here. Now, for $560, you can rest assured that you can start a black market. So the people that live closer to the border, you know, like, see, I live here in 6 miles from the Arkansas border. And I can drive across the border and go shop in Mountain Home, or Harrison, Arkansas, or Springfield, Missouri. So once a month, I'll go to one of those towns, and I'll spend my money. So, you know, if you're living 100 miles from the border, you know, instead of shopping in Kansas, why don't you just jump in the car and drive across the border into Missouri? And while you're at it, you know, you might as well shop at the Walmart store. You're going to shop at Walmart in Kansas anyway. So instead of shopping at the Walmart store in Kansas, why don't you shop at the Walmart store over in Missouri? You know, once a month. And buy your cigarettes over here in Missouri. Or Iowa, or wherever, you know, you're in one of the border states, where it's cheaper, and save yourself $500. Hell, for $500, that'll pay for driving the 100 miles once a month. How do you like that? Now, that's what economics are all about. That's what's happened down in Zimbabwe. See, they got a bad economic policy down there. Got bad tax policy, got bad economic policy, and as a result of that, they got a failed state, hyperinflation, and starvation. And if you want that in Kansas, you want that in California, then we need to follow the Zimbabwe example, which is exactly what we're doing with our monetary policy in the United States. That's why I keep telling you people out there, you need a 4-year supply of food because you got famine coming to the United States. Why? Because you think I'm a prophet sent by God? Hell, I'm just looking at your economic policy. Everywhere in the world where we follow this economic policy, we have failed states, economic poverty, and starvation. And I'm not talking about just you're going to be paying more for food. I mean, you're going to have people dead with bloated bodies in the street. You got an economic policy and a food policy here in the United States that defies description. If you people understood your food policy in this country, it would terrorize you. You'd forget about cancer and heart disease. Hell, I ain't worried about cancer and heart disease. I'm worried about where's my next meal coming from. You know, we need to pay attention to food policy over here. More than half, over half, 54% of the food that you're eating out of your Walmart store comes from outside the borders of the United States. And this country is bankrupt. 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 You're broke. Can you people understand that? And then your president's out here talking about floating $1 trillion worth of bonds out here to pay for a stimulus package? Boys and girls, let me tell you, from the point of view of economics, if you take all the other countries of the world and lump them all together, the only money they've got available is about $1 trillion. That's all the savings there is available in the world is $1 trillion, and your president plans to spend that on a stimulus package over here. And if you think that's going to happen, boys and girls, you can't count. Which is, you know, what the president and these politicians are counting on when they make the big sell. They know that you people can't count. They know that you cannot remember from one election to the next. And so it works. I'm not denying that. The president is going to sell the stimulus package, and that's going to be a god-awful disaster. That's why I'm telling you, when this stimulus package passes, you people need to go out and put in another year's supply of food. As soon as that thing passes, don't let any moss, don't let any grass grow under your feet on your way to putting in another 1 year supply of food. You want to remember that when this thing turns turtle now, the people around the world are not going to subsidize you Americans now at their expense. Now, that's assuming that they could. My take on it is they wouldn't, even if they could. But they can't. They cannot feed all of you Americans and keep your living standards at the level to which you Americans have become accustomed to living, because they simply don't have the wherewithal to do that. And they're already choked up on trillions of dollars worth of our worthless, toxic paper. We've been out here raping, robbing, and pillaging the world now for 50 years. And the party is over. Party's over. Now, let me give you this number again. It's the Heartland Institute. It's called the Budget and Tax News. And it's for the purposes of understanding the economics behind these taxes and these government policies. Not that I'm here to get you to change them. Hell, you're not going to change them, and neither am I. But what I do is I position myself for the economic shockwaves that are coming from them. You know, get ready for this, kids, because it's going to be traumatic. God-awful traumatic. See, we've never had a runaway inflation in our lifetimes, and we haven't had the kind of problems they're having in Zimbabwe. But it's coming here, and it's coming here because of the policies. It's coming because of the tax policies. Remember, this is heartland.org. Heartland.org. Or you can call them. See if I can get you a number here. You can call them here. They're up in Chicago, Illinois. Their telephone number is 312-377-4000. Yeah, I'm out of time again. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but it's by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling plan program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, that's it. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.